You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. Happy to have you with us, and happy to have with us our draft and minor league experts, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. Jonathan, we have seen your mock draft. Jim, you're in the middle of yours. Talk about how the top five picks might unfold, Jonathan.
Yeah, well, keep in mind that in the world of mock drafts, you know, 10 minutes after yours goes up, it's outdated. That said, you know, for my go-round, and I do get extra points for going first, I had Dylan Tate from Santa Barbara in the top spot. By no means am I convinced that he's going to be the top guy, but he is one of the, you know, the top few guys that have been bandied about. But, you know, I know Jim is knee-deep in making calls for his, so maybe he has more up-to-date information.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you said that, Jonathan, about how much they change as soon as you send them in. And you know, we're doing this on a Tuesday morning, and I'll file my mock draft Wednesday night. And what people read Thursday morning may be totally different than what I'm saying right now as I get more information. But, you know, I still think there's a lot of uncertainty at the top, that there isn't that classic 1-1 slam dunk type of pick. My gut feel as of now, and I reserve the right to change my gut feel, is I'm starting to sense that if the Diamondbacks at 1, the Astros at 2, and the Rockies at 3 all had their top choice, that top choice might be Vanderbilt shortstop Dansby Swanson. So as of now, I project him going number 1. And I just think he's riding, you know, Tate, you know, is not, you know, first full season as a starter. I don't think the stuff is as sharp as in March or as in May as it was in March and April, and I think he's losing just a little bit of steam. And for whatever reason, even though I think Brendan Rodgers is the best prospect in the draft, I think the teams at the top favor Dansby Swanson a little bit more. So right now, I think I would have Swanson going 1, probably Brendan Rodgers going number 2 to the Astros.
All right, so that stays the same as what I had.
And then the Rockies at 3, you know, I don't know if they would go Tate either, even though for a long time those were the consensus top 3 picks. I'm almost starting to wonder if the Rockies might go Daz Cameron at number 3. I'm hearing Daz Cameron pretty much all over the top 6 picks, and I think he may actually wind up going ahead of Tate when all is said and done, although there's still a lot of time left between now and the draft on June 8th.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I've heard the same thing about Tate. You know, he's not going to slide really far, but I've heard he's not been quite as sharp as he was early on, which makes some sense. He's in uncharted territory in terms of the amount of innings he's thrown. So, you know, if he slides a little bit, because I had Tate 1 and then Rodgers 2 and then Swanson 3. So if Tate slides out of the top 3, there isn't that guy that screams, I'm a top 3 pick. So it could be Cameron. One guy that, you know, I know we're going to talk about, Carson Fulmer from Vanderbilt, is a guy who I had going 5 to the Astros. His name is cropping up a lot more as well. And then there's, you know, all this talk about deals. A lot of people think this is going to be a draft where a lot of deals are going to be made, starting maybe all the way at the top. You know, so, John, I'm curious, you know, what you're thinking. Is that just the usual pre-draft chatter, or do you see a Tyler Stevenson sneaking up into the you know, the top 5 in some sort of pre-draft deal?
Well, we still keep hearing names like Tyler Stevenson, the high school catcher from Georgia, and Garrett Whitley, high school outfielder from New York, you know, being tied to Diamondbacks at 1-1 when they're more, you know, I think, mid-first-round picks. You know, I kind of chalk it up to a lot of chatter. I mean, it seems like most years, except maybe 2011 recently, you know, scouts bemoan, oh, the talent's not what we thought. And I do think this year there is a clearer lack of those 1-1 type of picks than there normally is. And then you get the talk about this time, oh, you know, the teams have the upper hand because the players aren't out there. And I do think because the pick values continue to rise with baseball's revenues, and the number one pick value for the Diamondbacks is at $8.6 million, and there isn't an $8.6 million player in this draft. I don't think there's an $8.6 million player in too many drafts. The all-time record for straight bonus is $8 million to Garrett Cole, and there have been a handful of guys who, back when you could get major league contracts, got more than that guaranteed. But I don't see the need. Ultimately, I think the Diamondbacks are going to take the best player, although, again, I don't think anybody knows for sure. I think they're going to have leverage over whoever they take, whether it's Swanson or Rogers or Tate or whoever, because those guys aren't, you know, locks to necessarily go, you know, like let's say they wanted Tate. Tate might not go in the top three, so you have some leverage there if you want to take him at one. And I just think, you know, I think if you're the Diamondbacks, you're picking first for a reason, which is that you have a bad team. I think you take the best player on your board, whoever you determine that is, and you're still going to save at least a couple $1 million to play with later in the draft. So it's, you're going to get a discount anyway. I don't see the need to cut a deal with Stevenson or Whitley for a number that begins with a 4 and save $4 million, because I just think by the time the Diamondbacks pick again in the second round, there's not, you know, it's not like there's going to be a $5 million player waiting for him to, you know, to take. And if there is, to be honest, there are teams that pick in between the first round in the second round. I think there's, you know, 17, 18 picks there. You know, those teams are going to get first crack at, you know, any top guy who falls anyway. So I just think that they take the best player, and I understand the positioning. You know, maybe it gives you some leverage when you talk about, hey, we're looking at these guys. But I think in the end, you have to take the best guy.
Jonathan, you mentioned the name Carson Fulmer, the right-hand pitcher out of Vanderbilt. There's also Arkansas outfielder Andrew Benintendi. These are two of the latest hot names. What about those guys, Jim?
Yeah, I think Fulmer is neck and neck with Tate right now as the top pitching prospect in this draft. A gun to my head, I think I might take Fulmer over Tate right now. I mean, there's more effort in the delivery, and he's not quite as big as Tate, although Tate's not, you know, classic, you know, starting pitcher's build either. But, you know, Fulmer's been a starter for, you know, over a year and a half for Vanderbilt, one of the top programs and the top conference in the country. He's performing well down the stretch. His stuff is electric. He maintains it deep into games. You know, I talked to somebody yesterday who said, yeah, there's effort in his delivery, but they think you can slow the delivery down a little bit. And thought he was definitely a starter. So I think Carson Fulmer could sneak into that top five consideration. And, you know, Benintendi's a guy who, you know, people knew he was eligible this year as a draft eligible sophomore, but he wasn't a priority guy. And now I think he's got so much buzz. I don't know if you're hearing the same thing, Jonathan, but I think he's made himself the third best position player in this draft, college position player, behind Swanson and LSU shortstop Alex Bregman, and I think he's going in the top 10 picks. I think he goes somewhere in that 7 to 10 range.
I think he really could. The biggest thing that I think he added this year is power. You know, he was one of those guys that people thought it might be in there, and he's actually shown it in games to the extent where I think people think it'll be usable power. So now suddenly you have a toolsy, you know, fairly advanced college position player, one who a lot of people think can play center field. Obviously, he's not just a speed guy, maybe top of the order kind of guy, but he's added strength, and so now you've got a guy who's got power and speed who can play center field. I mean, there's not a lot of that in any draft class, and certainly not in this is not a draft class that's really tooled up in terms of those like five tool kind of guys. And I think Benintendi has separated himself with how he's performed, you know, in a good conference to boot. So that certainly helps as well. And, you know, Fulmer and Tate are similar in that there are questions of whether or not they can start long term. And, you know, Fulmer did relieve for Vanderbilt in the past, and, you know, did a little bit of both last year. But he's, you know, for my money, he's probably been the best starter in the college game this year from start to finish, and he's really finishing strong. Last two starts, two complete games, struck out 14 last week, was a shutout the week before. If he continues to finish strong, I know that scouts will say that they try not to be too performance-based or last impression-based, but it's going to do nothing but help him. If he goes out in the SEC tournament with a lot of people watching him and pitches the way he's been pitching, he's definitely going to be in that top five conversation.
Guys, let's get to this wave of hitting talent with the Cubs, both in Chicago with Chris Bryant, Madison Russell, and Jorge Soler, and coming soon, Javier Baez. Last year's top draft, Kyle Schwarber, who was the consensus best bat in last year's draft, and the Cubs' number one draft choice, and who's, again, it seems, making it look easy. And shortstop Gleyber Torres, one of the top two ranked players in the 2013 international signing class. Guys, it's only going to get better on the north side, Jim.
No, it is. And I think the thing that's impressed me the most about the guys who are in Chicago already, you know, we all knew Chris Bryant could hit for power, but you know, I cannot remember seeing a rookie come up and get pitched around as much as he did from day one. I mean, James Shields was working the corners and throwing cutters and not really challenging him. And for the first 20 or so games, you know, Chris Bryant didn't hit a home run in the big leagues, which was an upset. But he was still productive because he was taking walks. He wasn't getting himself out. And now I think that the big league pitchers realize, look, we are going to have to throw this guy some strikes. He's homered four times in his last nine games. Even though he spent the first eight games of the year in the minors, he's leading the team in RBIs. He's leading the team in walks. You know, Addison Russell, who's kind of had to learn second base on the fly because they weren't getting any production out of the position, you know, got off to a slow start, but he's hit very solidly, and you know, since May started, and you know, I think he'll continue to do so going forward. And you know, Soler hasn't quite hit for as much power as I thought. I think he's going to continue to get better, and you know, he's getting on base as well. So I mean, they're getting, you know, contributions from three rookies right now, who are all playing very well. You know, in the, I don't know if it's too early to call it a pennant race, but I mean, this is a team that plans on contending, is contending, and these guys are a major reason why.
Yeah, and then coming up behind them. You know, Jim and I were talking about this. You know, Kyle Schwarber, their first-round pick, was, you know, seemed a quote-unquote bit of a reach, you know, just because he wasn't being talked about in the top 10. And given that he's, you know, got you know, a line of 327, 445 on base, 645 slugging with nine homers and 23 runs batted in 34 games in Double-A during his first full season, clearly they were onto something. And you know, catching is—it's going to take some time for Schwarber, if it comes at all. I'd be really tempted to put him in left field and bring him up. You know, I know that's a huge leap from Double A, but I think this guy can hit at any level, and you would just add to their offense. Now, you could argue about what the best configuration would be in terms of all this talent. Ed, you mentioned Javier Baez. He's, you know, seems to have figured things out again, and probably is ready for a shot soon. They might be best suited with Chris Bryant eventually in left field and Baez at third, but we'll have to wait and see on that. And you know, but for a guy like Schwarber, the way he's hit pretty much from the get-go since he, you know, first set foot on a pro field, I don't think it's going to take much longer for that bat to be ready to contribute in Chicago.
Yeah, and they have more guys, I was going to say, beyond that too. I mean, it'll be very, I think, interesting to see how it shakes out because you've got, you know, Billy McKinney, who also came over from Addison Russell in the Jeff Samardzija trade, he projects to have, you know, a left field type of bat, and he's having a very nice year, just got promoted to Double A. They've got Albert Almora, who's more of a defensive-minded potential gold glove guy in center. So there's two more outfielders right there. You've got Dan Vogelbach, who's having about as good a year as any minor league first baseman right now, although he's got no place to play with Anthony Rizzo and not really the versatility to move elsewhere. And, you know, you got Gleyber Torres, who Ed mentioned, who is probably one of the best teenage shortstop prospects in baseball. And, you know, they've got a little time to figure out what to do with him. But, I mean, he's barely 18 years old, and he's hitting close to 340 in low Class A. So he's well ahead of the game, too. I just can't remember, and I don't know if you can, Jonathan, I can't remember ever seeing a team with this much young hitting talent. It's just so impressive, and it seems like they just keep adding more names to the list.
They add names and they perform. Like, the, you know, guys have not, like, fizzled out. I know Baez struggled a little bit, but he went back down and got back to work. And it is an impressive stream. You know, it's a good problem for Chicago to have. When you have a backlog, and, you know, eventually you can use some of those pieces to maybe trade for pitching if they feel that they're in a race later on.
The long-awaited day of redemption is almost at hand on the north side of Chicago. On the Pipeline Podcast, we now welcome to the broadcast left-hand pitcher Blake Snell, who was Tampa Bay's Organizational Pitcher of the Year after finishing last season second in the organization in ERA and third in strikeouts, and has outdone himself with an astounding 49 consecutive scoreless innings pitched now. Blake, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us. And at any level, have you ever done anything like this in your life?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, this is kind of something special. So Yeah, nothing has really happened like this in my life, but I'm happy it's happening and just going to keep going.
Blake, what do you do to make sure that you don't think about it? I mean, I would imagine it's somewhat similar, like if you've got a no-hitter going, you try not to focus on that and just, you know, each batter and things like that. But I have to imagine there are times as this streak has grown this year that it's crept into your thinking a little bit when you're on the mound.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I don't really think about it until a guy gets on third base, and then I'm like, okay, I got to step up here. Like, I don't know. It's only when a guy gets on third or second that I really start to, like, think about it. But when I'm in the windup or guys on first, I don't really think about it.
Well, what's the closest somebody's come to scoring? Have you actually had anybody thrown out at the plate during this streak? Is there ever a time when somebody hit a ball and you're like, uh-oh, there goes the streak, and somebody bailed you out with a good play behind you?
There was one play at the plate against Bradenton. Ball got hit up the middle. Second baseman went to get it. Hit it. He, like, booted it to left field. The guy from second was slow, so he was going from third, running home, and then the second baseman got the ball, threw it to home, and that was the only bang bang play at the plate. But other than that, there's only been a handful of runners on third, and that's about it.
Yeah, it'd be one thing if you were doing this or even just pitching well at one level, but you know, then you get promoted, so it's a whole new league, and that, you know, everyone talks about that jump to Double A being one of the toughest to make. You've not really skipped a beat at all in terms of how you've pitched. Have you noticed any difference between the Florida State League and the Southern League in terms of the guys you're facing?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot. There's a lot more hitters that are more patient. They know what they're looking for. But for me, pitching-wise, I didn't really change anything. I just kept attacking the hitters, making them swing at what I want them to swing at, and that's kind of how I've been going about it. And it's been working, so I'm just going to continue to do that.
Have you felt, Blake, like your stuff is any different or better this year? I mean, you know, the scouting report I've always heard on you is, you know, kind of low 90s fastball, you know, good breaking ball, you know, pretty good changeup too. And, you know, looking at your stats, you know, you've cut your walk rate, but not, you know, it's not like your control's taken a huge leap forward, and your strikeout rate's up a little bit, but not significantly so. But nobody, I mean, you're just not giving up any hits. I mean, do you feel like your stuff is better? Are you doing anything different on the mound where you feel like you've taken a step forward, or has this just kind of been a happy coincidence?
No, I feel I'm in better shape, so I feel like I don't have to really try to do my hardest and then get worn out. I feel like I stay in good shape throughout the whole game, and I just feel more consistent around the plate. Like, yeah, I'm walking guys, but a lot of these are long at-bats where I walk a guy, and I've never really felt like I'm a wild pitcher. I just feel like I get lazy and don't focus on this pitch that I'm throwing. So, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm a wild pitcher, and I feel that as long as I just keep competing around the zone, I should be fine.
Blake, before you go, what have your teammates said about this incredible streak that you've put together? Your manager, management, what have you heard?
Nothing much, really. I mean, we kind of don't talk about it. We just go about it like it's another normal day. And there's no real talk about it. I mean, everyone knows it, but we don't talk about it. We just kind of go on with our business and act like it's not there.
It's an extraordinary achievement, Blake, and Jim and Jonathan and I wish you continued success, and thank you so much for being on the Pipeline podcast with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Blake Snell for us, Tampa Bay's Organizational Pitcher of the Year, and he sure looks, guys, like he's got to step up on doing it again if this continues, if nobody can score off the guy.
I'm just glad that in my spring training report from Rays camp, I singled him out as a breakthrough candidate. So I look really smart right now, and that doesn't happen very often.
Jim, what do you think?
No, I mean, he's definitely taken a step forward with the performance. I mean, it's nice that I think the pleasant part of the story, too, is, you know, the Rays had a great opportunity a couple of years ago when they had 12 picks before the second round. And right now, you know, Snell looks like he'll be the one guy out of that group, you know, just one, who could really pay off. I mean, they have some other guys who've gotten to the big leagues, but I think Blake is probably the biggest chance for success from what was, you know, a very, you know, promising, unique opportunity. Doesn't come along too often in the draft, and he's delivering for Tampa Bay.
Boy, is he ever. Blake Snell, 49 consecutive scoreless innings pitched. On behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks so much for listening to the Pipeline Podcast.